is Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. More workers around Wisconsin are able to take a box of fresh vegetables home with them after a long day of work. That's because more employers are setting up community-supported agriculture, or CSA, drop-off sites in their offices. I recently drove around with a delivery driver for one local farm. Craig Scott has arrived at the first delivery stop of the day at Train Company in La Crosse. He picks up a phone to tell security its weekly delivery of CSA boxes has arrived.
Yes, this is Craig Scott, and I work for Ridge and Harvest and do a CSA drop-off here, and I'm back at the loading dock. Okay, thank you. Bye.
As he waits to be let in, Scott lifts the door on the back of his truck. CSA boxes filled with fresh vegetables and herbs are stacked to the ceiling. It's clear that basil is part of this week's delivery, since the smell overpowers everything else.
There's broccoli, basil, zucchini, beets, kohlrabi, Swiss chard, scallions.
Later in the day, the train employees will pick up their box of organic produce from a small closet dedicated to the CSA drop-off. Viroqua-based Ridgeland Harvest makes about 75% of its income through CSAs. In the La Crosse area, its sales are up this year, partially because more workplaces are establishing drop-off sites. Julie Garrett is the community program manager with Fair Share CSA Coalition. It received a Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin grant to help expand and streamline workplace CSA programs, mostly in the southern half of the state. Garrett says she thinks more employers will continue to get on board each year. She says there are so many ways businesses can get involved, with the most basic example being dedicating space to the drop-off.
But others do things like they offer payroll deduction and incentives to joining up. They have cooks come in and teach classes. They organize farm events. So they're kind of invested at a higher level in workplace CSA.
And Garrett says that can help improve employee morale and be a form of team building. Some health insurance companies in the state even offer a CSA rebate, so members can get cash back for signing up. Meanwhile, Craig Scott continues his workplace deliveries around the La Crosse area at a construction company, two hospitals, and...
Now we're at UW-La Crosse, CSA, Graft Hall. Going to drop off some boxes here, and it's pretty simple.
Scott wheels seven Ridgeland Harvest boxes into an empty meeting room and neatly places them on a long table. This is the first year UWL has set up a CSA drop-off site. About 50 employees get weekly and biweekly packages from two different farms. Deanna Kobliska works in human resources at UWL. She helped set up the CSA site as part of a staff wellness initiative.
Usually there's one vegetable eater out of every family, and just introducing some of those different things for their family members is really great. Because as we look more and more at just overall health and well-being, eating is a big piece of that.
Kobliska says they want to continue the program next summer and hope more employees will sign up. Back on the delivery route, Scott adds that beyond healthy eating, CSAs can be a huge economic boost for farmers.
Anything that will support farmers, I believe in, so I think that is a big part of it. And, you know, we're from Wisconsin, so agriculture is like an underpinning of our economy, especially in this area of La Crosse County, Vernon County, Crawford County. There's a lot of organic growers and farmers in there, so it's good to support.
Plus, he says CSAs give coworkers something fulfilling to talk about around the water cooler. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. There are a number of employers in the Cooley region that are now allowing community-supported agriculture, or CSA farms, to sell fruits, vegetables, and herbs in their office. Here to talk more about why employers are offering the local food benefit to employees is Kyle Zenz, who owns Old Oak Family Farm in Bangor, and Sue Karpinski, Health Promotion Coordinator for Franciscan Health Solutions Mayo Health System. La Crosse County UW Extension Director Mary Meehan Stroob asked Kyle Zenz to elaborate more on the concept of a CSA.
A CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, it can mean a variety of things to different farms, but the general idea of what a CSA is family members or individuals pledge their support towards a farm for the growing season. So what we have is we have members say, we want to join your farm, Old Oak Family Farm, for the growing season. For us, that means 20 weeks. That's from mid-June to the end of October. And each member who supports our farm as members of our CSA will get a box of produce every week for those 20 weeks. These members do pay us up front, so the farmers receive money and support at the beginning of the season to buy our seeds, to pay our labor. And so it's a huge step for a member to invest in our farm. And for your first-time members, you know, I have no idea what they're going to receive for the year. But as a farmer, it means so much to have our members support us and give us that financial support at the beginning of the year, because we fill the boxes for 20 weeks, and it's seasonal produce. Things change from June to July to August to September, and it gives our members a chance to try a variety of produce, a lot of things that they are familiar with, carrots, tomatoes, lettuce, onions, and then some things that they might not be familiar with, kohlrabi or Napa cabbage or Brussels sprouts. So we find that a lot of our members really enjoy the opportunity to try new things, because it's not something that they would typically buy at a grocery store. They may know what it is, but it's not something they typically put in their basket. But when they get this box of produce from our farm each week, it's kind of like they feel like they have to use it. They don't want to throw it out. They've already paid for it. So a lot of members find that they eat more vegetables and their family sits down to more meals because they've prepaid for our CSA. So they feel like this is an investment that they made and they want to follow this through throughout the whole season. And it really just gives people an opportunity to eat locally, to eat seasonally, and to try a variety of different produce while supporting a local farm. So it's definitely a benefit to the farmer to receive that support at the beginning of the year. We know what we need to grow for. We know how many people we're serving. And it's a benefit to the consumer because they get a variety of ultra-fresh produce and to try new things and just really create a connection with their family or their friends by eating these vegetables.
Tell me what the morning is like on the day that you're going to deliver CSA boxes.
Our CSA packing days, they get a little bit crazy. We start early and have several crews harvesting things, several crews packing, you know, bunching carrots or putting lettuce in bags. And then, you know, pretty much at 12:30, we start packing boxes. And we usually put, you know, around 10 items per week in the box, so 10 different varieties of vegetables. And each of our employees has a turn to put in one item, and then it's just an assembly line where we just go through and put in each item. And it's always fun when you look at the end product and see the box, and it's colorful, and there's different things in there. And it is like a Christmas present when you open it, because it's kind of fun, like, what do we get this week? And we do tell our members what's going to be in the box always on Sundays, so they kind of have an idea of what to expect. But sometimes that changes, and even if they know what to expect, it's still fun to open it up and actually see, you know, the vegetable. And like kohlrabi, for example, we leave the greens on, so people sometimes see vegetables in different forms than they would at the store buying them.
So how did Franciscan Health Solutions, Mayo Health System, get involved in inviting a CSA in to sell vegetables and fruits for your employees?
Franciscan Heritage, it has a focus on the whole person. Healthy eating, exercise, stress relief, all have a direct impact on the lives of the patients, but also of the families that we serve. One of our strategic priorities is focused around nutrition. It's an area of significant interest, and we have a strong desire to offer more wellness and nutrition activities and other activities around nutrition. Our approach is we encourage and support family involvement in healthy eating. So a way to do that, encourage the family in that involvement, is through the CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. It's another way people can gain access to the fresh produce, learn the lifelong benefits of healthy eating, and then encouraging people to live healthier lifestyles. It's another step trying to prevent a chronic disease. The CSAs offer our staff and community food that's grown closer to home. It's closer to home. It's full of nutritional and health benefits, and I think it tastes better. And plus, it supports our local economy. Through our Health Tradition Health Plan, we have a rebate option. So individuals who are eligible for the rebate, if they are a plan subscriber, there's a Eat Well rebate, and if they so choose, they can take advantage of that. And if they purchase a chair in a CSA farm, they can get up to $100 rebate for that, for their participation in the CSA.
That shows a strong commitment to this effort.
Right. It is. Yeah, it's a win-win. It really, it's a win-win. We eat healthier. We help our local community. We help the local farmers, the economy, and the environment.
How long has Mayo been involved with this?
We started the program in 2010. We started it having a few open houses, invited all the CSA farmers at the event. We have a so what we do too is to keep employees engaged. Marketing is a key thing because it's easy to participate 1 year and then time passes and a season comes, season comes and ends. Now to get the employees engaged again, get them ready to participate in it once more.
So how do you market to them?
So for marketing, we have a website for the employees on health promotion. So all of our activities are posted on there. We have a section very specific to nutrition, and on that we post the listing. We contact all of the CSA farmers late in the year, usually December, January. We send them a letter asking them to provide some information if they'd like to be included on this listing, and then that listing is posted on our website for employees. We also post a listing because some of the CSA farmers are part of the farmers markets. We have a listing of farmers markets that are within the La Crosse area and surrounding area, including in multiple counties. So they have that access to that information. We have articles in our newsletter for the employees. We put articles very specific to CSAs. We try to select a success story, someone who has been involved in the CSA to help promote it, because sometimes it's those testimonials. It's one thing to read it and you're not sure of it, but if you read it and you hear about it from someone that you know, then that also helps in its own marketing.
How has the participation been with your employees then?
It's been good. We have over 40 employees at this time taking part of it, and then also over 160 individuals through the Eat Well rebate program through Health Traditions Health Plan.
Kyle, the Old Oak Family Farm is the only actual farm physically in La Crosse County that's identified as a fair share or a CSA farm. I know there are many in the surrounding counties, but am I correct that yours is the only one in La Crosse?
Yes, our farm is the only fair share approved from the Fair Share CSA Coalition farm in La Crosse County. And we do not deliver to Madison. A lot of the CSAs in the Fair Share Coalition deliver to Madison, but just our association with Fair Share CSA Coalition is just, we've really enjoyed it. They're an amazing organization that helps to promote education about CSAs, education about eating healthy. And they also provide a partner shares program, which helps provide CSA access to all families with limited incomes. And it's just an amazing opportunity for a farm, a family to have a farm. You know, that's one of their sayings, a farm for every family. Mm-hmm. And we are happy to be a member of them. And we're happy that they're supporting CSAs and promoting more education in the La Crosse area and working to create the workplace CSA programs.
So as you think about what you're promoting with the sale of the garden and vegetables and the things that you raise on your farm, do you see what are the benefits that you see for your CSA to selling to workers at other businesses?
For our farm, just in general, it's nice to sell to a workplace because it's an added drop-off spot for us, and we can drop several boxes off at once. So just the ease and convenience of that is a very easy one to just say off the bat. But we enjoy just meeting the different types of people who are at these CSA workplaces and hearing stories about, you know, coworkers talking about, well, I got kohlrabi this week. What did you do with yours? This is what I did with mine. So increased workplace camaraderie and just the fact that we can help workplaces make it easy for people to pick up CSA shares. That's one of the limitations. Sometimes people say, well, I don't have time to drive to the farm, or I don't have time to drive to your pickup point in a different spot in La Crosse. But it's not too hard to just walk down to the basement after work and grab your CSA box and head home. So it's a convenience thing, and we want to make eating vegetables easier for people. And so by having it at their workplace, that's one step to making it easier for people to eat vegetables.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm Mary Meehan Strube, and we are talking about a growing trend of community-supported agriculture programs selling their produce to employees at larger employers in the Cooley region. My guests are Sue Karpinski, Health Promotion Coordinator for Franciscan Health Solutions, Mayo Health System, and Kyle Zins, owner of Old Oak Family Farm in Bangor. So what percentage of your business roughly comes from area businesses?
We have about a little over 30% of all of our members pick up their CSA box at a workplace.
Let me step back, and you told us a little bit about your farm in the beginning, but to help people get a grasp, how many acres do you put in of vegetables in a year's time?
We grow on our farm around 10 acres of vegetables, and some of that's, you know, corn or squash that takes up a lot more area, but about 10 acres, and we grow over 60 different varieties of vegetables. And then within that variety, like one of the varieties would be a tomato, but then we grow maybe 12 different varieties of tomatoes. So we grow a lot of different things on our farm. And that's one of the things about being a CSA is you need to have a diverse planting of vegetables because you want these vegetables to be available from, we start our CSA in mid-June all the way to the end of October. So the boxes are going to look much different in springtime where we have, you know, some asparagus, some rhubarb, towards October where you're going to be seeing winter squash and maybe rutabagas and things like that too. So we have to have a lot of things growing on our farm all at once, and it's kind of fun. It's fun to be diversified and have different options to give people new vegetables to try.
So as the work that you're doing has changed and you now have that many acres of produce that you're growing, are you able to keep up?
We are. You know, farming's hard work. It's definitely hard work. At the end of every season, we're happy to take a little bit of a break. And, you know, farming is nice because it is cyclical work. You know, you work super hard and during the growing season, take a little break, and then you get rejuvenated and get excited when those seed catalogs roll in again and start planting again in the spring. But it is hard work. And, you know, we hire workers to help us. Sometimes we have CSA members come out and actually work for their CSA box so they can work in turn to get a box of produce to take. And and we've figured out ways to kind of adjust with the different demands of the work too. Like I said, we're a small farm. We're not trying to be huge because we want to make sure that we do have time to balance priorities, personal priorities, and, you know, work priorities too. But we enjoy it. We do. It's hard work, but we definitely have fun with it.
Do you see yourselves expanding?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely down the road we'll expand. You know, we're not aiming to be the biggest CSA in Wisconsin, but we believe more in keeping our members happy, more in quality of produce, and, you know, just having a good product and not being overwhelmed with the demand to try to increase, you know, tenfold within the next few years. I see a gradual increase, you know, with our CSA each year.
The reason I ask that question is with the expansion of employers sponsoring the CSAs and providing the kinds of rebates that Sue has talked about here, I would think that it might be an opportunity for a real surge, and I just was wondering if you'd be able to handle that, or is there a planned expansion that will work towards that as well?
I would encourage other farms to, you know, mm-hmm. to in the La Crosse mm-hmm. area to start a CSA program too. You know, it's definitely hard work, but there's a lot of different opportunities and information out there for farms to start CSA programs. And I know there's a lot of amazing vegetable farms in the La Crosse area, so there is definitely room for more vegetable farms to become a CSA. And like I said, there's lots of resources out there to learn how to take that next step to become a CSA farm. And, you know, like I said, we'll be growing gradually, but there is more demand out there.
Mm-hmm. Pilot efforts at April Air showed that CSA participants in the Madison area reported there was reduced weight loss, increased energy, and reduced cholesterol for their family members. What are you hearing from any of your employees at Mayo Health Systems?
Well, from ones that I have talked to personally, mm-hmm. they look at it from it's that one step to forming those healthy behaviors. and it, creating that awareness. And sometimes, you know, that when they have the fresh fruit and vegetables, they're trying things they never tried before. So getting that box, it's like Christmas. You open it up, and it's like, oh, my gosh, look at all mm-hmm. this color. And now the next thought is, okay, what do I do with it? But then it fosters that family, because then it gets the family involved. They start taking care of those vegetables and how to prepare them. And so it's teaching those behaviors and instilling that into their children. And then the adults, over time, as they start utilizing the CSA shares and eating that healthier foods, then they are more apt to be more conscious of their behaviors. And it does, end point is, yes, those results that are showing in those biological markers, those biometric markers, when you're looking at the cholesterol and blood pressure, because that also in turn then has an impact on other choices that they make. It might be physical activity, because once they see how well eating well, that's fueling your body, how well that does for them, then they start adopting other healthy behaviors, and it just trickles down, and it has a greater impact, because there's some that I've talked to that have been doing it for a number of years now, but it took getting a box full or a half share full of vegetables and now having to learn what to do with them. Because some aren't, they're not all cooks. No, they're not all mm-hmm. chefs that are there, but that's where it's so helpful to have books that we also help, we steer them towards, which is like the asparagus to the zucchini and farm fresh and fast, where it gives them how to store it, how to prepare it, what to do with it once you get it.
Do you see that this opportunity for your employees, do you see that it will expand in the future?
I hope so. When we're looking at for expanding, it's really a matter of marketing and getting more individuals to understand that what this can offer them, and that convenience, like Kyle mentioned, it is that convenience. From the ones that are involved, they like the varieties. They're trying things they've never would have tried before, because sometimes, you know, when you're in that grocery store, it's tough to make a decision. Do I buy this or this? I know my children will eat this, but I'm not quite sure about this. And so I think the more we can promote it in different avenues and encouraging, like I said, one of our strategic initiatives is healthier eating. And with that increased promotion, I think it will increase participation in the CSAs.
I know that there have been efforts to reach businesses and their employees that have included presentations, cooking demonstrations, assistance in filling out those health insurance rebate forms, even the books that you've mentioned through the Fair Share program, the Farm Fresh and Fast and the Asparagus to Zucchini. Are you involved with any types of these services or educational efforts here in the La Crosse area?
Yes. Our farm has done several different presentations talking about what we offer, and not just our farm in general, but just what is a CSA. And so we've given a couple different presentations about that, helping people understand, you know, what is this that they might be getting into, what to expect, what's going to be in a box, how do they deal with it after they get a box. And we've been at different fairs around the area with a special CSA fair, but also just like the Earth Fair that they've had, and just helping to educate people about eating healthy, whether or not they join our CSA. It's just helping people understand different vegetables that they can purchase and what to do with them. And I think a big thing is what we do as a CSA is we create a newsletter each week helping people understand what to do with these things that they get in the box, but helping people understand the importance of cooking more at home. And even if it's just eating their carrots raw or peeling their carrots, but just helping them understand that, you know, not everything needs to be packaged and pre-cooked, but to sit down, work with their kids or their family or their spouse or a friend, invite a friend over and just cook from scratch and try to figure out what to do with these things. And it makes a huge impact in future eating behavior, I feel like. Once they realize they can do it, they gain the confidence in dealing with vegetables. But so, yeah, for our farm, we focus a lot on education and any way we can educate people, whether they're in our CSA or community members. We're very interested in that.
I know in the past when I've talked with you on the radio, you had been testing out recipes for radicchio.
Radicchio.
And I wondered if you had mastered that to the point, I think we were talking about green drinks at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can throw in smoothies, and radicchio is one of them. We don't currently grow radicchio. It's kind of, you know, a specialty green that people sometimes will put in salads and things like that. But we grow a lot of other fun things that I really enjoy educating people about because, you know, fennel is one of the things for myself. I always hated fennel and I really wanted to like fennel. So I tried fennel a million different ways. And now I found that I love roasted fennel. So that's one thing that I just, you know, even with the like the radicchio, is I try to help people understand if you don't like it one way, try it another way or try it a different recipe and find a way that you do like it. And, you know, it's like you say with little kids, try it, you know, 5 to 10 different times before you realize you might like it.
So it isn't that they get their box and they're left to try and find out what to do with it. There are things that are provided, whether it's through the recipes or the books that you've talked about, that can assist as well.
Yes, we definitely don't just leave people hanging with a box of things that they may or may not know what they are. Mm-hmm. Our website also has a lot of recipes that you can link by variety of vegetable too. So if you are wondering what to do with broccoli one week, you just click on a link for broccoli and it has several different recipes that we've included over the years.
So I know that Mayo Health Systems has a variety of services either through their clinic or the medical institution there at various locations in this region. Is La Crosse the only one that you have the CSA opportunity available?
Actually, we have just expanded to the Eau Claire area. So we proved a success here in La Crosse, and it didn't take much thought to say, okay, hey, this is a great thing, and we've had people asking for it in another region. So we then expanded it to the Eau Claire area, and so far it has been going very well.
Do you only have one opportunity each week for families to be able to get CSA boxes, or do you have that staggered out and different farms coming in at different times?
We have three farms that come in. And that, so on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, each day there's a different farm. So employees have a choice. There are some actually who chose to pick up at a different site. So even though they may not be picking up at the drop site we offer, you know, their spouse might have one in their workplace as well. But we do offer the three different days.
Sue Karpinski is Health Promotion Coordinator for Franciscan Health Solutions Mayo Health System. Kyle Zenz owns Old Oak Family Farm in Bangor. They talked about more community-supported agriculture farms delivering fruits and vegetables to area businesses. The discussion was led by La Crosse County UW Extension Director Mary Mian Strube. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Coming up next, we'll look back on Major League Baseball with former Commissioner Bowie Kuhn. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCullum. Major League Baseball's 85th annual All-Star Game pitted the best of the American League against top players in the National League earlier this week, just up the river in the Twin Cities. And if you happen to overlook the results, it was the American League that came out on top, 5-3 over the National League, which did include some fine playing by Wisconsin's own Milwaukee Brewers. As with other professional sports, Major League Baseball has had its good years and bad years. New stadiums versus old stadiums, new owners, player trades and issues, and, though not for another 2 years, contractual discussions between team owners and the players' union. With this year's All-Star Game making headlines this week, we thought we'd dip back into our own archives to look back at the state of baseball some 10 to 20 years ago. It's part of our ongoing recognition of Newsmakers' 40th anniversary year. In 1969, Bowie Kuhn was elected to serve as Major League Baseball's fifth commissioner. For almost 20 years prior to that, he served as legal counsel for the league. His 16-year tenure as commissioner is second to current commissioner Bud Selig. Among the most significant matters tackled during those years was free agency. In a 2003 Newsmakers interview with Bowie Kuhn, Local reporters, including Wisconsin Public Radio's own John Davis, quiz the sometimes controversial commissioner on a wide variety of topics, including his take on then-commissioner and former Milwaukee Brewers owner Bud Selig's first 10 years.
I give Buddy pretty high marks. I think he came in at a very difficult time. I mean, one of the first things he runs into along the way, at least, is this sort of major collision in the mid-90s with the union where the ownership was determined there had to be some changes. There had to be changes. And the union equally determined there would not be changes. And that led to the disaster that we got in the middle 90s with the long strike that wiped out a World Series and all of that. Probably maybe ranks for the Black Sox as one of the low points in baseball history. So Buddy has come in an extremely difficult time. But what he has done, and I admire this, he has said, look, we're going to work with the union. We're going to do the best we can. We're going to improve the situation with the union. I think he's done that. We're not going to sit tight on the game either. We're going to make changes in the game. If baseball is going to have its proper position in the American entertainment picture, we can't sit on the formula we've been running. Maybe we need another tier of playoffs. He's got another tier of playoffs. Maybe we need a wild card club in the mix. He's got a wild card club in the mix. Maybe we need interleague play. He's got interleague play. Maybe we ought to centralize control of the administration of the game more than it's ever been. Get rid of the league presidents. Centralize it all on the commissioner. Make it more efficient. He's got it. Maybe we ought to run the umpires from one central office and centralize and standardize the work of the umpires to get a better product out of the umpires. He's got it. That's a pretty good line of successes that he's brought off. And so I'm watching, but I give Bud good marks.
Very few people other than Bud Selig are criticized more in baseball. Does that just come with the territory of being the
commissioner? Well, I think it comes with the territory. I could speak to that. I was there for 16 years, and I think those 16 years are pretty golden years for baseball. We had a great run. Enormous buildup in attendance, enormous buildup in popularity. Everything worked pretty well. Some things didn't, but a lot of things worked well. Of course, part of it was the strike we had in 81. But apart from that, you know, things worked pretty well in baseball. And, you know, I caught heat right and left. It's funny because I think the American public, and this goes back to the national pastime status of baseball, I think the public thinks they understand baseball better than any other sport. Football's too complicated. Great sport, but complicated. They don't pretend to be Lombardi. They can't. Or Pete Rozelle. They can't. They're not going to try to do that. Basketball's a complicated game. But baseball, they understand baseball because they threw a baseball when they were 4 years old. They didn't throw a basketball or a football. They threw a baseball. People think they understand the game of baseball. Therefore, those who manage baseball, who administer baseball, come under more criticism than I think anybody else in sports.
What is the current state of Major League Baseball? Is it in good shape? We've come through another labor agreement. Was it a good agreement for baseball?
I think it was. Whether it leaves baseball in a good situation may be another story, and I think one to which we're not going to know the answer very soon. I think the important thing about that agreement is perhaps the stage it set. This union goes back to 1967. In fact, I was the first interface with the union for the management. At that time, I was then a practicing lawyer, but they asked me to come in and handle that. So I know this setup from a long way back. It's traditionally what's happened is we've had stoppages, we've had strikes, and not a very happy relationship over the years. Lots of difficulties, lots of animosity. Current commissioner calls it the 35-year war. But in the last negotiation, contrary, I think, to what most people were predicting, there was no strike, no stoppage, no nothing. They bargained hard. And very significantly, the Players Association, for the first time, I think, really addressed the fact that the management is struggling in a profit and loss sense. And if an industry struggles in a profit and loss sense, you've got going to have problems in some direction or another. And I think the players made a very genuine effort to try to accommodate some of the needs of the management, to put some do some things that might improve competitive balance in baseball, might move more revenue around in baseball from the more affluent to the less affluent, and thereby give some greater hope for competitive balance in the sport. And in other directions, I thought the union made a real effort to address problems, not as much as I perhaps would like to have seen, but some real effort. So I'm encouraged by what happened.
Any sense that the clubs are going to take that revenue sharing, I guess they call it, and turn that around and invest it into their clubs, or are they just going to use it for the short term to make up
It's a good question, John, and I know that some of the people on the player side were not so sure there shouldn't have been some constraints imposed on that point. There were not. However, one of the things that's very characteristic of baseball and has been as long as I can remember is an intense entrepreneurial sense. Probably of all the sports, it's the least cooperative within its own ranks, the most competitive within its own ranks. And that being the case, the likelihood that they will be less than at their best in terms of being competitive on the field, that likelihood is not very great. I think they'll do their best. Whether this is enough to put Team X, Y, and Z up there with the Yankees or the mighty Red Sox, speaking from my biases, remains to be seen. But I think it's going in the right direction.
Steve Rowe from WIZM Radio as our next question.
You spoke to the 35-year war. I would assume that's the late players versus owners. Is that what you were alluding to?
Okay. Yes, that's correct. Not my phrase, you understand. I borrowed it.
Right,
from Buddy.
Right. You mentioned it, though. What do you think of free agency? I mean, has it been good for the game? Because here we are decades later, and the war continues, so to speak, according to Bud. I think you attribute to Bud Selig.
Well, you might say the war has continued. I think the question that you have to ask, Steve, is has the game prospered, notwithstanding the war? I mean, that could be true. I have a hard time saying that free agency is bad for baseball. Oh, I guess in an ideal world, and assuming you could find some system to compensate the players fairly in any sport, you wouldn't want to have free agency because you like to preserve identity of players with teams. Once you have free agency, you have this rapid movement of players in the system. Therefore, it's harder, I think, for fans to identify with teams than it used to be. And that's a criticism you hear all the time. That said, free agency also creates some excitement. It gives teams a chance to gear up and be competitive by picking up a player or two. And if it does not otherwise drive the system out of economic whack, then I have no problem with it. The difficulty, and that's why you have the continuing debate between the players and the owners, is that they have not been able to find a way to get the system back in economic balance so that you have a reasonable chance of prosperity both at the ownership side and the player side. And until they settle that problem, there's going to be difficulties between the players and the owners.
When to follow up with that, in the most recent labor agreement, of, I think it was last year, that in the way it was being painted publicly was that the players were somewhat inflexible in terms of negotiating, and I don't know if you agree with that, and I want to get your
feedback. I think that was the general assertion.
But as a layperson, and I'm not real close to baseball, but as clubs offer the contracts, clubs offer the money and have the choice to not offer contracts to players, why do you think the general perception is the players are the hardball entity in these negotiations and the owners are kind of victims?
I understand the question. I think there's two different levels. One is the individual contract that the club signs with the player. There, the clubs are certainly not the hardball players and not the hardball pushers, so to speak. The escalation of salaries has been indeed because the management has repeatedly been willing to go out and pay very large numbers to attract the players they want to get. So I don't think that's where the I don't think either side has been particularly subject to criticism. Well, I shouldn't say hadn't been subject to criticism. Management's been subject to criticism for overpaying in the eyes of many people in the public. As far as I'm concerned, management pays what the players are worth. And if the player can get X million from the management, the player is entitled to it. So that's not where the hardball is. The hardball is in the collective bargaining, which is the overriding and controlling decision, agreement, that governs the total relations between the clubs and the players. There, I think the players have been very obdurate over the entire 35 years of the relationship until the current bargaining that occurred in this past year. Then the players, I think, perceiving that the legitimate interests of the owners needed to be addressed, began to address those legitimate interests. And therefore, you see accommodation being made, agreement to more revenue sharing, which could have some effect on the players, and so forth. So I think what you see is a general willingness and a mood of cooperation with the management, which we hadn't seen before.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. On the occasion of Newsmakers' 40th anniversary and this week's Major League Baseball All-Stars game, we've dipped into our 2003 archives for this interview with former baseball commissioner Bowie Kuhn.
It was either last night or the prior night, ESPN Classic did a piece on Henry Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the controversies, you were obviously commissioner for a long time, but one of the issues was right before he broke Babe Ruth's record. And one of the things that ESPN reported anyway is that, saying it was factual, I wanted to get your side of the picture, so to speak, of the whole games that led up to breaking the record. And you ordered Henry Aaron to play, I think, two of the three games in that opening series against the Reds on the road. Henry, of course, wanted to break it in Atlanta. And it also fell on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday. And the way ESPN reported it was that he asked to not play on the anniversary of King's death, and you ordered him to play. And, of course, we'll want your side of the story.
Well, that's a very interesting account. The ordering of Aaron to play two out of three games clearly was an order I gave. The Braves had announced, it was not Aaron, it was the Braves who announced that he would not play in that series so he could come home to break the record. Well, you don't have to play that kind of music long before a commissioner before you're going to have trouble. Here you have your star player, or certainly one of your star players, and you announce you're going to keep him out of the lineup in the regular season game so he can go home and break a record. Well, you don't play baseball that way. You're bound to go out and play every game to win. So Aaron, who had played in the prior season two out of every three games on average for the Braves, was going to be held out of, if they followed their theory, they were going to hold him out completely. And I said, no, you're playing two out of three exactly the way you played last year, which is the way you go out and play the Reds to the best of your ability to win. And that was the basis of the order. And he did indeed play the first two games of that series, set out the third, and hit a home run in the first game. Mm-hmm. The Vice President of the United States, about to be President of the United States, Jerry Ford, was there with me. We went down the field, had a ceremony, presented him with the trophy. I remember I even called the pitch. It was 2-0 count, Billingham pitching, and I said, Mr. Vice President, watch. This is the place, this is going to be the pitch right here. Just watch. And he put the next ball in the seats. But be that as it may. Now, the story about King, I've never heard that story before. I've never heard any of that.
I wanted to ask you about the Braves, too. You played a fairly infamous role in the moving.
Did you say infamous?
Yes.
Infamous.
In moving the Braves from Milwaukee to Atlanta, did you not?
Well, I don't know if I accept the word.
Is there a good story with that?
Well,
for Wisconsin sports fans, they may not be aware of it. You know,
the story on the Braves' move is that when the time came for the then management of the Braves to try to move the team out of Milwaukee, and they got the approval of the National League. At that time, this is 1964 or five, and there. I was the lawyer, one of the lawyers for baseball. I wasn't in baseball. I was an outside lawyer doing work for baseball. And so when the Braves announced they had the approval and wanted to move, they got sued by quite a number of people in the state of Wisconsin, including the state of Wisconsin. Bronson La Follette, the attorney general on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, so the county of Milwaukee and so mm-hmm. forth. So with that, in come lawyers from every direction to defend baseball because They sued everybody, the American League, the National League, the commissioner, you name it, they sued them. So somebody had to be the coordinator of the legal defense of baseball against the lawsuits filed. In Wisconsin, I ended up being that guy. And ultimately, while we tried the case and lost it at trial before Judge Elmer Roller, he restrained us from moving the Braves. We appealed directly to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, which was permitted. I argued it there. We won it. And then it went on to the Supreme Court of the United States from there, and the Supreme Court did not take the case, so that concluded it, and the move was official. So while I was certainly involved as a lawyer for baseball, my personal views were never sought and were unimportant. I had to do my job for my client.
Right.
But if my personal views ever did become apparent, it was that I was then approached by Buddy Selig and Ed Fitzgerald, who were the two key guys on the Milwaukee side, to say, what can we do to get baseball back into Milwaukee? Will you help us? And I said, you bet I'll help you, because in my judgment, it's really a great shame to have left Milwaukee. It's a great city. I'm sure it'll do well with baseball. Then in my first year as commissioner, we moved the then Seattle Pilots, which had gone bankrupt. People forget we had a baseball team go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And Buddy and Ed and their group bid about $10 million for it, got the franchise very much with my support, and baseball's been there since as the Brewers.
Miller Park is now in Milwaukee and has, in theory, solidified baseball for the next generation, I guess, in Milwaukee. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about all these stadiums that are being built and seen as the key to winning, I guess. Are they the key to winning, do you think?
Well, yes, in that they have a great economic benefit to a baseball club. I mean, if you're going to play in a second-rate ballpark, you can have a hard time drawing people and so forth and so forth, and you have all the difficulties that are attendant to that. New ballparks, more people, more revenue, more ability to go after the free agents and to run a good player development operation, all that's part and parcel of putting a good team on the field. So what you're seeing is a great array of wonderful new ballparks coming, and these are not the ballparks which were built at a certain point, in the 70s, when you had these multi-purpose ballparks, which were built both for football and baseball, and really didn't accommodate either one adequately. They were too small for football, usually, and too big for baseball, and the conformations weren't quite right, certainly, for baseball. Today, what you're seeing is more and more stadiums built purely as baseball stadiums and purely as football stadiums. I mean, Roselle and I he was a great guy to work with. We'd get in playoffs where we'd collide. We'd have to book the same field with events that wouldn't work. We couldn't schedule it. And so football being much more flexible than baseball in terms of home and home and that sort of thing, he would flip-flop games to get a game out of Cincinnati and into Cleveland. And accommodated is no end. We had all kinds of problems, but we worked them out between the two of us, and we had to do some accommodation on our own part. But we got that behind us. And you also had turf problems. Football wanted one kind of turf, baseball wanted another kind of turf, and the grass was best for everybody, mm-hmm. truth be known. So we struggled with all of that, but the new parks are ideal gems now built for certain sports.
You have a situation, and lacrosse kind of lies between the Twin Cities and Milwaukee, a situation where the Brewers lost the most number of games in a brand-new ballpark. The Twins made the playoffs in arguably one of the worst stadiums ever built for baseball. It's hard to make an argument that a stadium makes a difference when it comes.
Well,
to
Well, I don't. I think any kind of comprehensive argument probably doesn't work out, because you're going to find exceptions, or for whatever reason, it doesn't work according to the general rule. But the general rule, if you're going to run a competitive franchise in sports, whether it's, I don't care what sport it is, you've got to put it in a good arena that really attracts people and is fan comfortable and attractive. So you're going to see that's just going to be the way it works. You may find an exception, but don't count on it.
Boo Bowie Kuhn was Major League Baseball's fifth commissioner, serving from 1969 to 1984. He appeared on Newsmakers in 2003. The moderator was Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis. Our series of archival interviews is part of this year's 40th anniversary recognition of Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, photos, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.